And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge, dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we've got a fun show ahead for you here. We have a returning alumni guest. And before I introduce her, you know, I have been talking to you guys about the idea of if you become a real estate investor, why not go right into apartments? If you're thinking down the road, you might want to get into multifamily. Why, you know, feel, oh, maybe I'll get a few houses, maybe get a couple duplexes and start building your way up. And, you know, I've been sharing in our last Fun Fact Friday show, I talked entitled The REI Cleanse. I talked about a bunch of past podcast episodes where I featured guests that did just that. And one of those guests is Pam Scamardo. And Pam, the episode was 279, and it's entitled Engineer Quits Job in Only 2 Years with Apartment Investing. And she did it. Not only did she do it, she started her investing here in California, which is pretty high priced and pretty tough to get started. Most people will start in, you know, the Midwest or South, or where property values, you know, are a lot less. But she did it. And she is our guest today. Let me tell you a little bit about Pam. Pam has committed the last 8 years to acquiring, managing, and repositioning apartment complexes. She specializes in maximizing passive income for partners while preserving investor capital. Pam manages a multifamily asset portfolio valued at over $5.3 million through successful syndications. Currently, Pam serves as the founder and managing partner of TPK Properties LLC, a privately held multifamily investment company that acquires, manages, and renovates medium to large size apartment buildings in California, Arizona, Oregon, and Washington. Prior to founding TPK properties. Pam worked as an aeronautical and mechanical engineer at Lockheed Martin Boeing and UTC Aerospace. She managed properties that entailed detailed financial projections, new product developments, product launching, analytical testing and reports, as well as managing a global stress and design team. Pam has a BS degree in aerospace and mechanical engineering for the University of California, Irvine, and an MS degree in aerospace engineering from the University of Southern California. Pam is also an enrolled agent with an emphasis on real estate taxes. Well, Pam, welcome back to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Well, thank you, Bill. So happy to be back.
Man, it is so great to have you back. And you have a little additional member of your family, I understand, here since we last talked. I mean, forget yeah. about apartment buildings. talk about the real babies, right?
Right. That has been my current project. I have an eight-month-old now. I just realized as I was counting the months while we were talking, and he's 8 months old now. So I have two little boys.
Wow. Well, time totally flies. That is so exciting. Well, congratulations to you. I like how you spoke in like a real engineer. Yes, I have a new project.
He keeps me busy, that's for sure.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Well, you are a fellow Californian here, and you're just a little bit south of where I'm located.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it might be nice if just kind of give, a quick little rundown. I know in the other episode, and I'll have a link to that show, we go into detail about your, how you got started and so forth. But maybe you just kind of give us just kind of the quick overview of how you got started while you were an engineer living in Southern California.
Sure thing. So at that time, I was in San Diego and, doing my engineering job, which I love all the technical aspects of it, but I guess corporate America kept adding more hours. So it went up from 8 hours to 10 hours a day to 14-hour days. And at that time, I didn't have kids yet. And my soon-to-be husband and I, we were trying to plan for our future. And I thought, oh my, I'm never going to have time for, let alone my husband or future kids, if I keep working 14-hour days and having to be sent around the world, which, when you're single, it's fun. But when you want to have a family and kind of be stable, it kind of gets a little, scary not knowing when you're going to be home and are you going to miss out on things. So that's kind of how I started just dabbling at different things. And I went to a local real estate club networking event, and the presentation was about multifamily homes, and I was hooked. It started from that. And I, at that time, there was still Borders Bookstore. I went there and I started reading books, and I found Peter Harris and Peter Conte's book, Commercial Real Estate Investing for Dummies. And that's kind of where my journey began. And I haven't looked back since, and knock on wood here, thankfully, I don't have to go back to my, 9-to-5 job. I'm enjoying the schedule that I have now.
Well, after only 2 years, you were able to quit your job, right? And
yes.
Do full-time real estate investing. That's amazing.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I bought my first property in San Diego, right in my backyard. It was a 6-unit. And, I wanted to start a little small and close to home just so that if I needed to drive to the property unannounced, I could be there at a moment's notice and just kind of work out any sort of challenges that may come by. My first property had one unit that was literally gutted because a previous tenant decided to flood the whole unit. So that was a very large learning curve for me. So I was glad to be close by to help manage that project.
Egads. Oh, that'd be a real challenge. Now, did you just purchase it on your own? Did you have partners? You didn't syndicate or anything at that point, right?
Actually, good question. At that time, it wasn't a formal syndication because I didn't even know what the word syndication meant. But I worked actually informally with my engineering coworkers. So technically it was, an informal syndication between them and myself. We had about four partners total come in And thankfully, they trusted me with my analysis, and I shared with them the numbers, my game plan of what I'm going to do year one, year two, year three, and when they would get, you know, payouts and whatnot. And then they went in on it with me. So let's see, I bought it in August of 2012 and I refied, cashed out about 2 years after that, paid all of them off, including myself too. And that was pretty awesome.
What was the purchase price?
So the purchase price was $417,000 for a 6-unit property. Can you believe that?
That's really amazing. In California?
Man, yeah, and in San Diego.
That's unheard of. Wow.
I lucked out. It was right at the time when, the market was at its lowest and kind of slowly starting to climb back up. So I kind of lucked out with the timing in that, and I found it right away. And it was with Wells Fargo. It was an REO. They just wanted someone to take it. They said, please, you want it? Here you go. Fix it. So here's this, this engineer kind of like, well, this is my first project. I'm going to do my best. Here's my plan. And they said, yes, whatever you do, just put money into it and make it happen. And I'm thankful they believed in me. And I worked a little bit with a private lender as well to kind of help cover the renovation costs, and he was a local a local loan officer, and it was great. It was definitely challenging because as a first timer, you don't know who the players are and how to approach everyone, but we survived it. And that story is still there as a reminder every day, and I still have that property because it serves as a reminder that you can start from anywhere, and you just got to keep working hard at it, solving your problems, and just getting better each time.
Was it fully occupied?
It was not fully occupied because one of the units was gutted. So we had 5 out of 6 units rented at the time. Mm-hmm. And it took about, at that time, it was around $10,000 to kind of renovate that whole unit. We had to work with the city to kind of get all the electrical wiring redone. Cause I figured if I'm going in, I'm going to start kind of from scratch in a sense. I'm going to update a lot of things. Cause it hadn't been updated. So we were working with the city, with the permitting folks and, just coordinating back and forth for them coming out to check every step of the way. And that was kind of fun for me. I know it sounds a little crazy to some folks, but I actually secretly enjoyed that.
Okay. That is awesome. Well, that was 2012. Have you appraised it, recently? Do you kind of know what the market value would be today?
Yeah, it's a little crazy. I still have a hard time just swallowing the numbers. It's worth at least $900,000, if not more.
Wow. Yeah. It's like triple almost. I mean, that's crazy.
It's crazy because I keep getting calls from real estate agents of, hey, do you want to sell? Do you want to sell? I'm like, no thanks. And they'll give me the value because they've done their analysis. And they're like, well, Pam, it's worth this much. I'm like, thank you. But, I'll hang on to it. It's my baby.
Oh, that's great. And it's cash flowing well for you.
Yeah, it's cash flowing well. We're maintaining double-digit return, about 10 to 11%. It's one of the markets where, Bill, in California, it's already expensive. So a lot of the profit gets squeezed out with, high tax rates and expenses. But I'm still happy with it, with how it's performing.
So neat. Now, you guys aren't having to deal with rent control yet down there, are you?
Oh, yes, we are. That's the newest thing, huh?
Yeah. Tell me about it. Oh.
Yeah. But the good thing is we were able to just kind of not really sweat about it because if you've, been kind of keeping everything at market rent, everything's been kind of good and gravy, so to speak, then rent control, it's not that bad, so to speak. I think it hurts more if you have a lot of tenants where they're living there and it's like super under rented. I think that's where you run into a big issue.
Right. Now, you had already sort of upgraded it, got up to market, and probably sitting very pretty right now. That's great.
Exactly. And that's just kind of my motto. I kind of like to every year review with the property manager in the beginning of the year of like, okay, here's the game plan for the year. What are the absolute musts that we need to fix? What can wait? you know, and we go through that strategy planning together, and I always do some sort of upgrade, at least one every year. I just throw the money back in because I believe in kind of providing quality housing for folks as well, you know, and I think it just goes to pay back in the future. And so I'm kind of happy I'm not sweating bullets about this whole rent control situation because we have been upgrading all along. And so everything is at market rent.
Ah, that's great. That's great. So you went from six units to or six doors to how many doors do you have today?
So currently I have 70 doors.
Awesome. Awesome. And you're in multiple states now. Was that the only one you purchased in California?
Yes, that was the only one I purchased, unless you count my personal home and my husband's personal home. Yeah, where I'm mostly in the West Coast, just because I don't like flying far. But I knew that going into this, if you stay, you know, in the West Coast, you're going to be paying more to, you know, to buy a property. You won't get as much of a higher profit as if you went to the Midwest, for example. But I like where I'm at. So it's, you know, you got to go with what makes you feel comfortable and happy. And I like flying to, you know, the states around here, for example, Oregon, Washington State, Idaho, Nevada. I just stay local and Arizona. Like that's pretty much it for me. I mean, I have a colleague who decided to branch out and he invests heavily in Michigan State, for example. That's because he grew up out there. So he has his connections.
Right.
So that works for him, you know?
Oh, sure. And well, you got two little additional members of your family too. And I'm sure you don't want to travel that much. You know, they need their mommy.
Yes. As much as my husband can provide, you know, other mommy duties, at the end of the day, they want their mommy too.
Yeah. There's something about that, you know? But that's cool. Now, so venturing out, that's okay. So I can kind of understand the logical thing. You're in San Diego, you join a local networking group, okay, you make contacts there, which actually led to that, the purchase of that six, wasn't that correct? There was like a was it a banker or somebody or a realtor or someone that you met at the REI meeting?
Actually, he was a mobile home specialist, to be honest, but he was dabbling in apartment complexes. And the sad part is I don't remember his name anymore. That's just how we all met. And, you know, and he just said, hey, you should look into this. Start just calling, you know, local agents. That's exactly what I did.
Uh-huh.
That was his tip that he provided. And I thought, what do I have to lose? You know, so I just picked up the phone. I mean, and the best way to network, Bill, as I'm sure you can attest to, is face-to-face is the best, if not phone calls, you know, building that rapport.
Exactly. Oh, that's great. Great. So that, you know, that opened up this opportunity. But then, okay, all of a sudden you're going to go out of state. Now, okay, so it's a whole different process. Now, how did you get there? I mean, well, you know, to go from local here to finding, you know, a market to go to or were you referred? I mean, sort of what led to the first out of state purchase?
Well, to answer it in a nutshell quickly, it was Peter Harris.
He
was my mentor. After reading his book, I basically hunted him down. I read his book and he basically spoke to me through his engineering-like words. And I approached him to be my mentor to help me kind of grow. I bought local already in my backyard. I told him I want to go bigger. And I was having a hard time finding properties that fit my investment criteria near me in San Diego or LA or the Inland Empire. And so he helped me to kind of, you know, step outside my comfort zone and look outside the state. And that's kind of how I began acquiring out-of-state properties, thanks to him, kind of nudging me out of my comfort zone.
Now, did he actually have a lead or did you guys do direct mail or other ways? I mean, did he actually hear about the deal itself?
So the first deal I found through LoopNet.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
So back then, before LoopNet became CoStar and got really, really expensive, I actually found the deal through LoopNet, and it was on the freebie version of their service. And yeah, and he guided me on how to acquire it. So I didn't do direct mail at all. I just kept looking through LoopNet, and I found some of them that kind of met my criteria, and I would kind of bounce it back to Peter to see what his thoughts were. And then I picked up the phone and started calling the agents who had those listings. And then slowly, one by one, I weeded out the ones that I thought was a good deal, but then it turned out to not be. And, you know, and then I finally found the one that worked. We went on.
That's how you got started. And you just kind of continued that way. It led you into other states and were there broker contacts? There's a certain point, I know, where you start, you know, especially if as you successfully completed transactions, the brokers begin to look at you as, hey, this is somebody who, you know, I can share those off market deals with too.
Right. So it was my third deal. So my second deal was actually in Arizona. And then my third deal, I made another jump to another state in Oregon. And at that time, there was no rent control. So that was wonderful. So I made a jump to Oregon, and the broker connection that I had, again, I found him on LoopNet, and we had built a rapport through time. He started sending me off-market deals. And so it was just kind of like a leap of faith between both of us. And it worked out well because I bought, gosh, I want to say at least 4 properties through him.
Wow. Yeah. So that attests to that. If you can latch onto that right broker.
Right.
They can continue to feed your portfolio that's just wonderful. That is great. Okay. So you built, I'm kind of going a little bit ahead here because the fact that, you know, we do have a lot of this in the first podcast, but still, you know, this is, I think the process, it's important for people to listen and you explain it so well, Pam. It's, people can go, that sounds doable. That sounds, you know, that sounds feasible. I could see myself doing that, you know. Okay, so you built up this portfolio, okay, and after 2 years, you were ready to quit, and that had to be a big decision for you, I would imagine.
Oh my, yes, it was definitely scary, not going to lie about that. It was definitely scary, but at the same time, it was exciting. I mean, all the emotions, I felt just, you know, from happy to nostalgia to this bittersweet feeling of like, oh, I'm really leaving my buddies here, or, you know, they're still going to be working the 9 to 5 every day, but I'm going to be on my own. Am I going to survive? You know, everything just kind of came into it. But I have to tell you, the driving force behind all of it, it was my husband's support. And the love that I got from him of just like, you can do this. And at that time, we weren't even married. We were boyfriend, girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
So, that's awesome. You know, just the fact that he believed in me and just helped empower me. And then through working with Peter Harris as well, and just my own, I want to say it was my own determination too, of just, I was tired of being stuck behind the cubicle for so many hours a day. So I just felt like there has to be a different way out. And I'm going to sink or swim in this path. After I made up my mind, I was like, it's do or die, pretty much. That was kind of like my attitude about it. And that all just kind of came together. But I have to say, a lot of it, it's the love and support from my husband. And, you know, faith also helps out a lot. You know, not everyone has the same faith, so I don't get into it as much. But yeah, it was all of that. And I just kept going and try not to look back. You know, there's always, you know, stumbling blocks as you learn and grow. And you just keep going. You know, it's never going to be perfect, but you got to take that action. So I believe anyone can do it. It's personally, I feel like it's 90% mentality. Like it's about the mind shift.
Yeah.
The rest is 10%. Anyone can do it. It's not rocket science in a sense. You know what I mean? It's
sure.
You call people to talk to them. Well, we're humans. We're social creatures. We have to talk anyways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's not like there's a secret to that, but it's just practicing, you know, networking with folks, or practicing reviewing documents and doing the due diligence, developing your own system of how you acquire a property. And I think that's something you just come to it on your own as sure. you buy more.
And as you were sort of working towards that goal, some people, you know, that look at the number of doors, some people will look at the dollar amount and say, okay, if I reach this dollar amount, you know, that'll replace the income I have right now. I mean, is that kind of how you were looking at it as you're you know, growing your portfolio? Did you want to surpass what you made first, you know, just in case? Or, I mean, how did you sort of adjust your goal as to when you knew it was okay to quit?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. So one of the books I read that kind of helped me kind of narrow down my goal before I, you know, quit was Rob Kiyosaki's, one of his books that said, you know, before you quit kind of thing. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was something like that. Like, before you quit, here are the things you should kind of think about. But for me, what worked out is I sat down and I wrote down all my expenses, added it all up. And my goal was, if I can make equivalent to that and a little bit more, I am good. And if I have, like, at least, you know, a good chunk of money in my savings account as well, just in case if there are emergencies and whatnot, then I felt comfortable. So once I hit that point of my expenses have been met and I had some extra cash flow coming in, plus, you know, a little nest egg, that was when I realized I'm good to go. It's okay to step away.
That's great. And when you reach that goal, I mean, that must have been kind of exciting. I would imagine you've got so many, you know, units already going and you're getting closer and you're going, this next purchase is going to do it. Right. I mean, did it ever get to that point where you're actually saying if this deal closes, I'm going to be free?
Yes. So every deal, and this is a little, I guess, nerdy, if you want to call it, every deal I did, I wrote down on a piece of Post-it in a bright color, and I put it on my bathroom mirror. I put it on my fridge and just basically wherever my eyesight went throughout the house. And I would write just X amount left before you can step away. So that really helped motivate me every morning, every night before I went to bed. I like lived and breathed just, oh, this is awesome. It's actually happening. So every step I got closer to reaching my goal, you know, I'd write the numbers. I'd put little empowering words and quotes as well, just to help me through it. And so it got exciting as I saw that the gap was getting smaller and smaller of where my business income was basically about to surpass the expenses. That was just super exciting. So my husband and I, you know, we celebrated by kind of going all out. Once I did reach that point, and that was when we got married, it happened all around the same time. So we took a really long honeymoon. We went to Thailand, Singapore, the Maldives.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we love traveling and we love like tropical places and we love diving too. So that was kind of like our like 2 month stint of just like, hey, it's time to celebrate with all the hard work. And then get back to it again.
That is so cool. That is what a great story. Now, when you were working, and especially, gosh, when you were working 14-hour days, where did you carve out time to, you know, to look for deals, to, you know, talk to brokers and do all that stuff?
Oh, it was hard, Bill. It's not easy. And it gets harder when you have a family. So I understand all you mamas out there, or when you have obligations and things, but I would wake up extra early. So if I had to be into work at 7, I'd wake up around 4:30 to 5, carve out a little private time for after breakfast, get, you know, some emails out or calls out, because on the East Coast, they're ahead. So I would purposely do my morning calls to brokers out towards the East who are ahead of me. So that way I wasn't waking them up on the West Coast time. Mm-hmm. And then in the evenings when I got home, then I would return all the calls, send out all the emails. And during my lunch breaks, if I had to, sometimes I would take calls from, you know, lenders or, you know, you're working with title companies or you're working with property managers. I just had to make do with whatever time I could during my breaks. During the day. So that was tough because as an engineer, I didn't have access to Wi-Fi all the time because there are some projects where it's just kind of behind closed doors. So it's like I wouldn't know what would happen in a couple hours and I'd come out eager to just like check my phone, check my emails. And, you know, you just got to chug along. Every little bit helps. You just chip away at the big pile of work ahead.
Oh, sure.
And you get there.
And I bet your weekends are probably, I'm sure you had time during the weekends that that you would also devote to it as well.
Yes. And the beautiful thing about this, Bill, is that when you like something and have a passion for it, it doesn't feel like work as much. You know what I mean? Like it was, I didn't dread waking up. I was actually excited to wake up early to handle my business before I went into work. Or when I got home and had dinner with my husband and, you know, like it was time to kind of shut down for the night, I was excited to pop open my laptop to just see if I got any responses back from, you know, whatever related inquiries I had sent out. So it makes a huge difference when you have passion towards the things that you like. And that's one of the things I always urge people who ask me, how did I manage to do all of it? It's, you got to find something you truly enjoy as well. And the number one thing that kept, you know, us going is that taste of financial freedom too. And I just so happen to like what I'm doing. So it makes it that much easier.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, here you are. You are, you've been on your own for a little while here. Now you are a mother of two. So you've got, you know, a whole different challenges, okay, you know, to deal with. You don't have necessarily the, you know, the driving to work and, you know, trying to carve out time there, but you do have, you know, the two little ones. And so I'm sure that keeps you pretty busy. How is that as a mom trying to juggle? I imagine you've got property manager. How many property managers do you have to deal with?
Well, I just consolidated, meaning I trained one property manager to handle at least four or five of my properties. So
that's great.
So we're down to just two now. So that makes my life easier. And that was part of my plan as I was pregnant with my second one. I was like, I can't handle talking to, you know, so many different people. I got to just kind of consolidate my people. So I only have, you know, one or two points of contact during this time frame because I wanted to take some time off and really just enjoy the early months with, you know, bonding with my last one, so to speak. It's just, it's a different experience and it's crazy. It's very crazy because, you know, whatever you plan, and Bill, I'm sure you can attest to this as well because you have seven kids of your own, whatever you have planned never goes as planned.
Of course.
So you're always just kind of operating with like, well, I attempted to do this. Now we're just going to have to do something else. So that's the juggling of that could be a little crazy. But like I said, I had a plan in place to kind of narrow down the folks I needed to talk to on a daily basis or every other day. And it helped out tremendously. So I have to give major props to my property managers who, you know, kind of held the fort while I disappeared for, a couple months, especially the first 3 months after giving birth. I just said, hey, if the property's not on fire, please don't call me.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, and one thing, Bill, I remembered you asking, how did I manage to carve out time prior to having kids? The drives to work when I was still working, I spent them listening to podcasts like yourself, but at that time I didn't know you had this podcast, but you know, I would just listen to audiobooks. You know, the whole drive took about 15 to 20 minutes every day, unless there was traffic, both ways. So I made it valuable. I would listen to DVDs or CDs and things and whatnot, just anything to help further my education. So I think that's very helpful. So if everyone's tuning into your podcast, Bill, you know, they're doing something great for themselves.
Yeah, well, that's I'm the same way. In fact, in LA or Southern California in general, you know, if I have to drive from Orange County, let's say to downtown LA or something like that, you know, instead of like going, oh man, you know, it could be an hour, it could be 3 hours, you know, I don't know, but you know, but thank you, Lord, for audible.com, you know, because I love, like, I'm, you know, picking up a new book, you know, and in the drive, I could probably get a whole book done up and back, you know? Yeah. So it's like, and I'll speed up the, you know, the sound too on the books too, which is, which helps, but, no, that's a great, great thing where you can actually look forward to the horrible traffic in Southern California.
Exactly. And then now back to juggling with two kids here. It is rough. I have a 4-year-old, and you know, an 8-month-old. So, this past year, I've learned to delegate more to my husband, who's been such a wonderful father and a husband to me, to help out. So he started to help out more in his, not that he has a lot of spare time anyways, but, you know, in his time after work, to help me with things as I was kind of getting back to the groove. So I appreciate that a lot. It's just the family support really helped make a difference. And, you know, to everyone out there who, you know, you guys have your own financial situations and family obligations and whatnot, just keep on chugging along every little bit, every day. Just don't beat down on
yourself.
Yeah. Just be positive and just say, hey, I wanted to do maybe 10 things today. I only got half of one thing done. Hey, at least you got half of one thing done.
Exactly. That's the right attitude. Totally.
Tomorrow's a new day.
Uh-huh. That's right. Oh, that's so cool. Well, good for you, man. That's awesome. You mentioned one thing too, a little bit earlier, which I thought was really key. And we both know Peter, and he also has mentored me too. And you know, I think that the importance of early on getting a mentor is really key, I think. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree. Having a mentor saves you, you know, some time from making, you know, silly mistakes that maybe you can make on your own, but maybe you don't have that extra time to be learning through that. And I just think having some guidance really helps. Like, you know, just looking around, we have coaches for soccer and sports. We have, you know, professors who teach us in whatever majors we choose. We have life coaches. We even have, like, you know, therapists for our mental health. We have our physical trainers if you want to kind of start working out or work on like a triathlon or something. So why not get a mentor for this hustle, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, I know we sound like we're selling Peter here. And, you know, Peter, you can send your check to my P.O. box. But anyway, no. Yeah, right. No, but
I think just finding the key fit.
Yeah, it's got to be somebody that, yeah, that you sync with and, yeah, that makes sense, right?
Right. You want to do your research. You want to feel comfortable. And, you know, you can't put it in like a textbook format, but it's that gut feel.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have that connection with someone. And that's kind of what I felt when I searched for Peter, and the fact that his language kind of just spoke to me because, you know, I'm a numbers girl. And I was just
engineers.
Mind blown. Here we go.
No, that makes sense. It's funny because I when I recommend to people who are getting started in real estate, you know, what are the steps you should take? And, you know, the first one is research, education. And then I talk about the networking aspect. And that's another thing that you did. You know, jumped into finding a local network group and then the mentor, you know, all those things, you know, are key, really key to being effective and successful at what you're setting out to do. But you're expanding networking even a little bit further here and actually starting your own groups. And I wanted to hear a little bit about that. You're involved with other groups, but you're starting a new one. Can you share a little bit about that?
Sure. So I'm currently involved with CREW Inland Empire, which stands for Commercial Real Estate Women in the Inland Empire, but we're also open to men. But this network is just more for, you know, just kind of women to come help each other out and whatnot under the realm of commercial real estate. And so I've been volunteering in the group for a while as the program's director, setting up networking mixers and whatnot. And as I was observing just networking throughout, you know, the area here, I realized there's really no networking group on multifamily investing. That's really kind of like my bread and butter and like yours too, Bill. And so I kept looking around and just finding different groups that were more on the residential side. And so I decided to start my own. So on Meetup, I started Create Wealth, but the word create has periods all after each letter because it's, you know, it has a it's an acronym. And it's basically, I want to promote training and education. I want to be a source where people just come to learn more about what's out there under the commercial real estate umbrella. But obviously it's starting off with more of multifamily because that's my specialty and I want to learn more too. So really that's kind of, what kind of sparked that for me. This year is 2020. My vision for 2020, my intention is to just connect. I want to connect with others. I want people to connect with each other. I want to help people find who they're looking for. If you want a lender, okay, here are my contacts. If you want a tax preparer, here, you know, like go talk to so-and-so. I just really want to give back to my community in Rancho Cucamonga and Riverside, in Ontario, basically all the cities in the Inland Empire. There's just not a lot of these great kind of groups. So, and Bill, we'd love to have you come talk too, because a lot of people want to know how you got to where, you know, you're at now with your awesome podcast. So I will be scheduling you soon.
I'm looking forward to it. I love going out there, man. Rancho Cucamonga is like, you know, that's like a booming place right now. So that's great. Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, what about in terms of your properties too? So you got the networking thing going, but you're for 2020, you have some particular goals in terms of acquisitions?
Yes, sure. So I'm going to go big this year. I want to acquire 100 units.
All right.
I want to form a solid syndication and go after 100 units. So I'm on the hunt. I'm now back. Trying to, you know, acquire or just see what's out there. You know, it's been a while since I've been in the market because I had to take some time off, but I'm excited for that. I want to push myself every year. I always set a goal to slightly acquire more than I did in the previous year. And that's kind of what has worked for me. You know, I started off with 6 units and then the following year I got a 10 unit, you know, and I just kept growing small from there. It was just a minor goal of just like, can I get more than what I did last year, even if it's one extra unit?
That's great. That's great. Are you looking in the same markets for the 100 unit, or are you looking at possibly expanding to a market you're not in yet?
I'm actually open to expanding to a different market. So kind of looking all over, to be honest. And I just recently started, Bill, so I have no idea where I'm going to land yet. I kind of started putting my feelers out there. I said, hey, guys, I'm back from, you know, maternity leave. Let's see what's out there. You know, open to looking at, you know, any deal that comes my way to my desk. So yeah, I'm just kind of excited. 2020 is going to be a good year.
Oh, yeah. Well, it already is a start off with a new little baby here. So,
yeah.
That's 8 months. So that's probably that would have been last year, right? So,
yeah, but I still count him as a newborn. He just learned how to crawl. So it's super cute, just wobbling, falling. Like he'll just teeter totter over to one side and just kind of fall over. Oh, I just love it.
I know. It's the greatest years. Greatest years. Wow. Wow. This is so exciting. There's just your story is just very inspiring. And I hope those listening are encouraged too, that, you know, you just set your mind to it and you didn't get discouraged. And I know you had your challenges. You shared a little bit more of those on the other episode. I know that you had to overcome quite a bit, but, you know, you took a very, I think just a very methodical and systematized approach, you know, like an engineer would, right? And, but you know, that has saved you a lot of heartache too. And I think the fact that you have done it the way you have is really, really a good lesson for folks. So, we're excited to hear what's ahead. And as I pull you in next time and you'll be saying, yeah, we're going for 1,000 next year.
I sure hope so. Yes, well, thank you. Yeah, I want to give back to community outreach and different programs as well. And I forgot to mention, I volunteer as a tax aide with AARP.
That is so cool. That's awesome.
Just to help do taxes right now for seniors with, you know, lower regular income.
You're an accountant, right, too. Are you having an accountant?
Enrolled agent, yeah.
Enrolled agent. Oh, wow. That is so cool.
I love numbers.
Wow. That is so cool. Wow. Well, good for you, man. You're doing a lot of good stuff, and I know you're going to be blessed. So this is going to be neat. Hopefully, we'll check back with you again and find out how you catch up. Any last things that you want to add, or anything that you might want to mention, or before we have you close with our great old hound dog howl?
Oh, sure. All right. Well, I'll throw out my website again. It's www.tpkllc.com. If you all want to reach out to me. And again, you can search on meetup.com as well for Create Wealth. That is the new group that's launching actually next week. So February 13th is our first meeting. So I'm excited to just see who's out here. Like, what do people want? You know, I'm just so excited to just put my time out there. There's no charge, nothing at all. Just come. It's free. Come network, come mingle. I'll probably cater in some food, some snacks or something, because I love food. So
that's cool. Where are you going to have it?
Yeah, it'll be at a community center in Rancho Cucamonga. It's called Central Park. It's the Senior Community Center.
Cool.
Yeah, I figured since I volunteer there on the weekends anyways to help out the seniors with their taxes, you know, might as well just do another group right there.
Well, that's great. So our older members here listening, you know, might feel right at home if they could, you wouldn't mind them crashing for a while.
Yeah, not at all.
Those in the Inland Empire, got to look for the Create Wealth group. Yeah. Yep. And on meetup.com, right?
That's correct. That's correct. Thanks, Bill. And, cool. I'm excited to just catch up with you again and bring you out as well to interview you, turn the tables around, because I know you're a great interviewer.
I'll be there on those rare live appearances. Yeah. Gosh, Pam, this has been so cool having you on. Thank you so much for sharing that information. There's a lot of good stuff there. And I think overall, it's just going to be super encouraging for a lot of folks, even new moms out there that are saying, no, I don't have time for real estate investing. You know, even those can, look at this and say, hey, you know, maybe I can do a little on the side, you know, while my kid's napping, you know.
Exactly. You got to do the side hustle while everyone's asleep and it's 2 a.m. You're done nursing and you're looking around like, well, I could get a few hours in, or yeah, I could sleep. I mean, you got to sleep too, but yeah, sometimes right, you got to balance that.
That's right. Well, thanks so much, Pam, for being on. I really, really appreciate it. But you got to close us off. Remember, you've got to give us your best old hound dog howl. Are you ready?
I'm ready. It's an honor. Okay, here we go. Ow!
All right. Now that has more of an Inland Empire kind of sound, you know, than the San Diego sound. You know, it's a big difference. Anyway, well, thanks for being on, Pam. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
Oh, you bet. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there too for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. And please note, everything we talked about today and that Pam shared is going to be outlined in detail in our show notes at the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Pam Scamardo. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward. And may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.